The following radio message marked the official announcement of the beginning of a dictatorship that called itself Proceso de Reorganización Nacional, or Process of National Reorganization.
Comunica a la población que a partir de la fecha el país se encuentra bajo el control operacional de la Junta Militar.
The population is informed that as from today, the country is under the operational control of the armed forces. All citizens are recommended to fully obey orders and norms issued by military, security, and police authorities, as well as to take all the necessary precautions to avoid actions, either individual or in group, that force the drastic intervention of operational personnel.
Dan Carling is the expat. Fernando Farias is the local. BA Cast. The Buenos Aires Podcast.
This is our special edition on the 35th anniversary of the coup d'etat that put a military junta in power, an event that came to symbolize what is known in the English-speaking world as the Dirty War. 35 years ago, amid the context of great violence, with left-wing guerrilla groups operating in the country and far-right death squads that vowed to eliminate what they called leftist infiltration, the junta seized power, not unexpectedly for most of the population, and said they were going to restore order and peace. At present, there's abundant evidence that in carrying out their alleged counterinsurgency campaign, they committed a genocide with mass murder, torture, rape, forceful disappearances, and baby snatching, plus outright robberies. We counted for this work with the great collaboration of Professor Lucas Rentiro, a historian and one of the founders of Eternauta's History Tours, and also Christy Robinson, the editor of the English-language newspaper The Argentina Independent. In fact, here is Christy.
24th of March 1976, Isabel, the puppet president, if we want to call her that, is deposed in a coup. The junta that takes power is headed by Jorge Rafael Videla. When the junta takes power, they basically legitimize and concrete a lot of the policies that have been underhand beforehand. The disappearances of people on a massive scale, clandestine concentration camps, torture centers, prisons. The biggest of which is ESMA, which is here in Buenos Aires.
ESMA. It stands for Escuela Superior de Mecánica de la Armada, or Navy Engineering School.
Where they believe around 5,000 people went through the doors of ESMA, from the numbers that I've read. The disappearances meant that rather than killing people and leaving bodies in the streets, a lot of the people had disappeared. One of the policies that was
Which used, also psychologically is so much more effective.
Absolutely. And the first few years of the dictatorship were the ones where they came in with a kind of real iron fist clamping down, and then fear played a large part. One of the big tactics that was used in the disappearances of people was the death flights, where they would drug people and put them in a plane and fly them out over the River Plate and then dump them weighed down by concrete blocks or various different things to actually get rid of the bodies physically in the middle of the river. Some of the bodies did wash up on the shores of the river here and in Uruguay, and that's how some people started to realize what was going on.
Argentina became famous or infamous then for the word desaparecido that would be printed all over the world without translating it. The overwhelming majority of those taken by security forces were not made prisoners in a legal sense. They were disappeared. They became missing people whose whereabouts became a mystery, except for the junta that wouldn't acknowledge they had them. This freed their hands to interrogate and execute them without giving any explanations to anybody, let alone observing any kind of legal procedure. This is the de facto president, Jorge Rafael Videla, explaining what a desaparecido is.
Frente al desaparecido, en tanto esté como tal, es una incógnita el desaparecido.
With regard to a desaparecido, As long as it remains labeled as one, is a question mark if the man is found. There's a cause of action X, and if the disappearance becomes a certainty of his death, there's a cause of action Z. But as long as he's disappeared, there can be no particular cause of action. He's a question mark. He's a desaparecido. He doesn't have a status. He's nowhere. Nor dead, nor alive. He's disappeared.
Within Argentina, there was a total information blackout about this. Like a secret, tacit agreement in the media not to report disappearances or abductions. And they reproduced the official version provided by the Junta, no questions asked. One notable and honorable exception to that was the Buenos Aires Herald, whose editor at the time was Robert Cox. This is an excerpt of an interview he gave to RAE's English language program back in 2009.
The hardest thing in the world was to describe what the word desaparecido meant. At that time, people could not grasp. They couldn't believe it. I had a discussion by cable. At that time, it was also difficult. Communications were difficult. You sent it out by teletype. And the foreign editor of The Economist said, but people do not disappear, you know. They are. I was trying to raise the alarm because the abroad, the coup was seen as a velvet, you know, a velvet revolution. Bloodless and...
Picture this situation. You, all of a sudden, you don't see a neighbor who used to live next door.
Yeah.
And you ask another neighbor, what did happen?
Well, I must have done something.
And then you don't ask about that again.
Se utilizaba el argumento, un argumento muy, muy usado, que es el de algo habrán hecho.
Algo habrán hecho.
Oh, yeah. My wife's mother told me that one day over dinner. We got onto the subject And she said, well, people just justified it by saying algo habrán hecho. Yeah. They must have
basically
done something.
So many people refused to recognize what was going on. And I think people were bound to know. I don't see how they couldn't. Because the Ford Falcons went through the streets with these toughs inside. And if you got in their way, you know, they'd bang you, hit you with their guns. And everybody at one time or other knew of somebody who'd been taken away. I mean, in some instances, I mean, there was complete lawlessness. When, you know, now people are talking about lack of security, and there's no doubt about that. It's terrible. But at that time, I had a friend who was just kidnapped for his car by, you know, the security forces. I don't know whether they were police, army, navy, or air force, but that's what they were. He was lucky they didn't kill him, but they made him drive out to behind the Facultad de Derecho, which was one of the places that they used, and told him to get out of the car and run, and he ran and ran and ran. He didn't know whether he would end up riddled with bullets, but he never got his car back. There were lots of incidents like that, so it's very hard to tell. I think you could possibly say that many people managed to live outside it. We know that in other countries in the world. It is possible to live in a kind of mental exile.
There were a lot of people. My boyfriend is from the south of Buenos Aires province. Nobody was disappeared from the mid-sized city that he comes from, which has about 60,000 people. People honestly were ignorant. Some chose to be more ignorant than others, I'm sure, but they were getting on with their lives.
Right.
It wasn't that they were directly affected in any way by what was going on. And I've spoken to his parents about it. I fail to understand it. But when the media is not independent and is being manipulated and you're untouched physically or by family connections with anything that's actually going on, it's very easy to just
ignore.
Get on with your life.
So, yeah, well, I mean, it's the same. To me, it's completely the same as most of the United States does with all of the wars that the United States is involved in.
Here is Mara Burkhardt, a sociologist who's done research on the Junta years and specifically on one of the few publications, Humor, a magazine, that together with the Herald managed to get a different type of message through the heavy censorship and self-censorship of that time. This is her view on the reaction of many Argentines to the disappearances around them.
Mucha gente no quiso ver, hubo como una especie de no, consciente o inconscientemente, no sé, ahí es difícil de explicar.
People did not want to see, consciously or unconsciously, it's hard to explain. I believe there was some kind of tolerance, like saying just a bit more violence and this will be over. A large part of society that hadn't been involved in politics or activism thought they weren't going to be targeted by repression. So the por algo será or the they must have done something was accompanied by this other expression, this is not against me. So if you see they are taking someone away, it's because he did something. He had been active in politics, social work, unionist. There was an Argentine society that attempted to maintain a sense of normality. Look to the side. It's like, it's not against me. I've got my job. I kept my family. I can go on a vacation. People will go on vacation. People will go to the cinema. People watch TV. People bought newspapers. They will go to work. There was a day-to-day life. A metaphor of the process is that those were the dark years, nothing can be done. Truth is, people live their lives with soldiers on the streets, with kidnappings, with newspapers informing about corpses were found here and there. Unidentified bodies were discovered here. Bodies were found on a beach.
Con los diarios anunciando el encuentro de cadáveres NN y diciendo, aparecieron cadáveres en una playa.
Another person I worked very closely with was James Nielsen. James Nielsen, I'd say I am apolitical. I really honestly can't tell you whether I've been accused of being a communist, of an imperialist, everything under the sun. I don't think I fit any of those. I might be any of those things at one time or another. But James Nielsen was a very, very convinced, traditional conservative. And I can remember one time saying to him, Jim, you know, but aren't we wrong? I mean, everybody seems to think that this is the way you deal with terrorism, isn't it? And thank God he said, no, the horrible things that they're doing are just not acceptable. Even if that person was a terrorist, should that person disappear? Shouldn't that person be put on trial?
The answer, according to the Junta, was no. You're going to listen now to General Genaro Díaz-Bessone, a member of the Junta, in an excerpt of an excellent documentary made by a French journalist, Marie-Monique Robin.
How are you supposed to get information if you don't torture? Let's suppose there were 7,000 desaparecidos, even though there weren't 7,000 desaparecidos. Do you think we could have executed 7,000 by firing squad? Look at the scandal the Pope made to Franco over 3 executions. You can't execute by firing squad 7,000 people. The world would have come after us. You can't execute 7,000 people. And if you put them on trial, if you incarcerate them, what? It had happened before. A constitutional government comes and frees them all. Because this was an internal war. It's not the enemy that remained on the other side of the border. After being freed, they would take up weapons again and start killing again.
As it happens with several cases of genocide, figures, estimates, are a subject that sparks controversy. Human rights groups like Madres and Abuelas de Plaza de Mayo, plus the SERPAJ, the Justice and Peace Service Group, of Nobel Peace Prize laureate Adolfo Pérez Esquivel, placed the figure in 30,000 disappeared. A disclosed report by the Chilean intelligence in 2002 that was published by U.S. journalist John Dinges says 22,000. The CONADEP report that was commissioned by the government in 1984 resulted in around 8,000, but these are only documented cases, and there was a deadline to submit denunciations. The military and their supporters put numbers below 7,000.
One of the main reasons the final figure of desaparecidos is not entirely known is the shroud of mystery the Junta put on its repression plan. The Junta government was the only capable of keeping accurate records, but these records were either destroyed or remain hidden, secret.
In any case, beyond numbers, most of the military say that all these people that were disappeared were not victims of genocide, but combatants who died as a result of an armed conflict, a war. In connection with this justification, this is a quote from a book written by California University professor David Rock on Argentina's history.
In late April 1983, the regimen issued the Documento Final, or the final document on the war against the guerrillas. The junta claimed that its actions derived their legal authority from decrees issued by the constitutional government of Isabel Perón. The guerrillas, the statement continued, were not members of the political opposition, but armed revolutionaries bent on seizing power. Skilled in the techniques of ideological persuasion, the guerrillas had infiltrated innocent organizations and converted 25,000 to their cause. The Documento Final failed to explain how the military had determined innocence and guilt, but it implied that anti-government opinions constituted a crime. The statement also evaded the question of why detainees were not brought to trial. Implicitly condoning the torture and mass executions, the paper was little more than an apologia for a terrorist state.
Well, when Fernando said he wanted to do this for the anniversary day show, the special show that we're doing right now, I said, oh, you mean on the Dirty War? And he said, no. I said, well, what do you call it? He said, you don't call it the Dirty War. I said, what to yeah, say?
That's a common war? It's one of those words. It's like estadounidense, a word that doesn't exist in the English language. So you have to go to American to define, to explain what an estadounidense is. And the Dirty War is a term coined by the military to explain the methods they had to use to deal with their enemies, that they call the subversives, that included guerrillas, and also political activists and unionists and students and faculty and, well, anyone who could be targeted as a subversive.
Christy, why do we not say the process?
Because we translated the official terminology that was given at the time, and that's what stuck. I think partially the reason why the name may have stuck is because it was much more recognized what was happening in Chile with Pinochet, and that started in 73, whereas here things started a few years later. And the human rights abuses in Chile, by my understanding, were more widely condemned on an international scale.
Because they were on the surface.
Yeah, and so I think...
On the surface meaning known.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I think here, the junta that was in power from 76 to 83 had to come up with a different way of terming what was going on here by making out that it was a civil war and it was something that was necessary, and therefore the name came from that, and also the tactics being much more underground.
So Videla and his clan said, let's call it the Guerra Sucia.
When a trial against the military junta took place in 1985, the prosecution rejected the term war to describe what had happened. Let's quote the argument of the prosecution rejecting the concept of war.
What kind of war was that? With no documented operations? No list of casualties, both own and of the enemy? No prisoners as a result of any combat? No reports on the units involved? What kind of war is this in which clashes with the enemy are simulated or forged? Can we call an action of war the abduction in the middle of the night of unarmed citizens by anonymous groups? And even if these or some of these were real enemies, is it an act of war to torture them, to execute them,
while they weren't able to offer any kind of resistance? Is it an act of war to seize houses, hold the relatives of the wanted ones as hostages? Are babies military targets? Can we liken looting a household to seizing the enemy's arsenal? Are these the unfortunate consequences of any war? Can episodes of this nature be compared with the effects of an airstrike on military targets in which innocent people die? No, Your Honours. These weren't unfortunate yet inevitable consequences of a war. They were crimes that have nothing to do with war.
Another policy was that when political prisoners were taken, if women were pregnant, they were kept alive to give birth, and then the babies were adopted out to... Not all of those were adopted out to military families. Like, sometimes the adoptions happened and the parents didn't actually know where the babies had come from. Like, so almost the ultimate policy, raising the children with people who are ideological opposites of theirs.
I am Ramiro Nicolás Mena. My parents were Domingo Mena and Ana María Lancilotto. I was born in 1974. My parents were members of a political group called PRT, Partido Revolucionario de los Trabajadores, something like Workers Revolutionary Party. Well, in 1976, July 19, they were my mother and father were taken by the military. My mother was pregnant in her eighth month of pregnancy, more or less. We suppose that in August or September, my brother was born, or sister, we don't know. There are a great probability that my mother gave birth and my sister or brother is alive in the hands of someone.
Listen to the other parts of this special with more information on the previous years, the aftermath, the fall of the dictatorship, the guerrilla groups, the doctrine, the methods used by the military, and more.
BA Cast.
The use of kidnappings and forceful disappearances was implemented as a tactic by the Nazis in occupied territories during World War II. Targeting resistance fighters and their supporters through a decree called Nacht und Nebel, Night and Fog. The Wikipedia entry explains the rationale of this tactic. Distinct complaints by other governments or humanitarian organizations against the German government were made far more difficult because the exact cause of internment or death, indeed whether or not the event had even occurred, was obscured. It allowed an across-the-board silent veto of international treaties and conventions because one cannot apply the limits in terms of humane treatment in a war if one cannot locate the victim or discern his fate. Additionally, it lessened the moral qualms and confrontations of the German public as well as that of servicemen in an agreed and or ignorant silence. Imagine your significant other, a member of your family, a friend, is taken by groups that break into your house, and say they are from the government, the police, the army. They say they are taking him or her for interrogation, that they will call you, give you more information. And that is a call you never get. You go to the police station, they say they've got no idea what you're talking about, and everybody says the same thing. That's a form of the hell someone who searches for a desaparecido lives in. A reality that was told in this great song written by the legendary Panamanian artist Rubén Blades that you'll hear in the rendition of Argentine group Fabulosos Cadillacs. The track's title is Desaparición.
Ernesto tiene 40 años. trabaja de peón en un negocio de autos. Llevaba camisa oscura y pantalón claro. Salió de noche y no ha regresado. Oh, oh. Y yo no sé ya qué pensar, pues esto antes no me había pasado. No me había pasado, no. Llevo tres días buscando a mi hermana. Se llama Altagracia igual que la abuela. Salió del trabajo para la escuela. Llevaba puesto jeans y una camisa blanca. No ha sido el novio, el tipo está en su casa. Oh, oh, no saben de ella en la policía y en el hospital. Oh, oh, oh. Y en el hospital. Oh, 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 oh. Ay, por favor, que alguien me diga si ha visto a mi hijo. Es estudiante de medicina. Se llama Agustín y es un buen muchacho. Es a veces terco cuando opina. Lo han detenido, no sé qué fuerza. Pantalón blanco, camisa rayas. Pasó anteayer. Pasó anteayer. Es un alma de Dios y no se mete con nadie. Se la han llevado de testigo por un asunto que es nada más conmigo. Y yo fui a entregarme hoy por la tarde. Y ahora vi que no saben de quién se la llevó. El cuartel. Explosiones, tiros de escopeta y de revólver, autos acelerados, frenos, gritos, ecos de botas en las calles, toques de puertas, quejas por dioses, platos rotos. Oh, oh, oh. Estaban dando la telenovela, por eso nadie miró pa' afuera.
Por dentro,
¿a dónde van?